I love being a lesbian. I'm not going to apologize for that.
On October 13th, 1990, South Africa saw its first pride parade in Johannesburg.
I'm writing a little bit better because I understand myself a little bit more. I've gone through a lot and I understand what I'm trying to say a little bit better.
Going back to Carolina.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Brian DeShazer. Turkey's government proposes new anti-queer persecution. October anniversaries from Shepherd to South Africa and musician Jenny Arno on the comeback trail. Those stories and more this week, now that you've found This Way Out.
I'm Sarah Montague.
And I'm Joe Bainline.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending October 18th, 2025. Turkey is ratcheting up its persecution of LGBTQ people with a series of so-called judicial reforms. The government of President Recep Tayyip Erdogan seems to be mimicking fellow autocracies Vladimir Putin's Russia and Viktor Orban's Hungary, according to Turkey Today. One proposal announced on October 15th declares, any person who engages in, publicly encourages, praises or promotes attitudes or behaviors contrary to their biological sex at birth and public morality shall be punished with imprisonment of 1 to 3 years. Although same-gender sex is technically not against the law in Turkey, queer couples hosting engagement or wedding celebrations would face up to 4 years in prison under the new legislation. The maximum penalty for so-called public sexual acts or exhibitionism would be increased from 1 to 3 years. The legal age for gender affirmation surgery would be raised from 18 to 25 years. A trans person seeking surgery must be unmarried, they must undergo 4 separate evaluations at least 3 months apart, and a health ministry-approved training and research hospital must declare the procedures psychologically necessary. After the medical report is substantiated, they'll need a court order to amend their entry in the civil registry. Skirting the legal requirements to perform gender affirmation surgery is punishable by up to 7 years behind bars. The government says its rationale is to ensure the upbringing of physically and mentally healthy individuals and to protect the family institution and social structure. President Erdogan has targeted the LGBT community since he first took power in 2003. Pride celebrations that once drew record crowds in major Turkish cities are now illegal, and activists who attempt pride face arrest and assaults by security police. To Erdogan, queer people are perverse and a threat to traditional values and the family unit.
The Church of Norway is formally apologizing to LGBTQ people for years of bias and demonstrable harm. Presiding Bishop Olaf Fiksetveit delivered his expression of repentance on October 16th at Oslo's popular queer venue, the London Pub. That was the scene of a Pride Night shooting rampage in June 2022 that killed 2 people and wounded at least 21 others. As Tveit confessed on behalf of the bishop's conference, the church in Norway has imposed shame, great harm, and pain. This should not have happened, and that's why I apologize today. In the 1950s, the same conference called LGBTQ people a social danger of global dimensions. By 2007, the Church of Norway was welcoming openly gay clergy and blessing the marriages of same-gender couples. Tveit credited conversations with community organizations for his decision to go public. He said, "It is heartening when those who previously felt condemned by the church have welcomed us with open arms. It is a grace."
Wyoming's book ban battling local librarian has been vindicated in a $700,000 settlement against the state. Terry Leslie was fired by the Campbell County Public Library Board in 2023, after 27 years of service. a contentious two-year debate, had raged in the U.S. state's northeastern region over the removal of books on sexuality and queer identities. The board withdrew from the American Library Association and the Wyoming Library Association, both of which opposed censorship. Some of the books Leslie was refusing to remove included How Do You Make a Baby by Anna Fisk, Gender Queer by Maya Kababi, and Dating and Sex, A Guide for the 21st Century Teen Boy by Andrew P. Smiler. The librarian stood firm against the escalating pressures, but was ultimately forced out by a 4-1 vote of the board. Now, with her victory, Leslie told the Associated Press, "It's been a rough road, but I will never regret standing up for the First Amendment." Leslie's attorney, Iris Halpern, said in a press statement, "We hope at least that her victory sends a message to other library districts, other states, other counties, that the First Amendment is alive and strong, and that our values against discrimination also remain alive and strong."
Australia has no place for Candace Owens. The High Court unanimously upheld Home Affairs Minister Tony Burke's 2024 visa rejection for the far-right U.S. podcast personality. Burke found that Owens failed the Migrant Act's required character test, pointing to her extremist and inflammatory comments toward Muslim, Black, Jewish, and LGBTQIA+ communities, which generate controversy and hatred. The court agreed, writing, "There is a risk that Owens would stir up or encourage dissension or strife in the Australian community, or a segment of that community of a kind or to a degree that is harmful to that community or segment." Owens' suit claimed that Australia does protect political speech from criminal prosecution, even though it has no formal laws protecting freedom of speech. She's infamous for such political speech as Holocaust denial and conspiracy theories about climate change, gender-affirming healthcare, and COVID. The court countered, saying the implied freedom of speech is not a personal right, is not unlimited, and is not absolute. The three-judge panel unanimously concluded that the Australian people were not being deprived of Owens's views because they are still easily accessible online. The influencer must also pay the government's legal costs. As Minister Burke wrote in his original visa denial, "Australia's national interest is best served when Candace Owens is somewhere else."
As the Trump administration marches the United States into autocracy, former President Barack Obama is increasing his public profile. He's actively campaigning for the passage of Proposition 50 in California. It's a congressional redistricting ballot initiative meant to counter a Trump-ordered move in Texas, where the map was rearranged to favor 5 more Republican seats in the U.S. House. Prop 50 would create 5 more Democratic-leaning districts in the Golden State. Obama has been a consistent LGBTQ ally ever since he first voiced support for marriage equality. The 44th U.S. president was a final guest this week on the venerable WTF podcast, where he and retiring host Marc Maron talked about taking a gentler approach with the opponents of gender-affirming health care for young people.
If I talked about trans issues, I wasn't talking down to people and saying, "Oh, you're a bigot." I'd say, "You know what? It's tough enough being a teenager. Let's treat all kids decently. Why would we want to see kids bullied?
Or shamed.
Or shamed. Yeah. Why would we want to do that? Why wouldn't we want to just, you know, what if it was our kid?"
Finally.
Morning, everyone. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Welcome to Greenhouse 3 Second Years. Now gather round, everyone. Today we're going to repot mandrakes.
If Professor Pomona Sprout is known for her emphatic morning greetings in the Harry Potter movie franchise, 84-year-old British actress and national treasure Miriam Margolyes is known for waking up her fans in other ways, as she explained to Irish TV's The Late Late Show host Patrick Keeley.
"You have described yourself as unapologetically woke."
"I am. I'm a left-wing dyke. And I love it. I love being a lesbian. I'm not going to apologize for that."
"Where does the fun come from?"
The fun in being a lesbian?
or generally in life.
And that's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending October 18th, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Sarah Montague. Stay healthy.
And I'm Joe Bainline. Stay safe.
Hi, this is Greg Louganis.
I'm Margaret Cho.
I'm John Ritchie.
This is Edmund White.
Hi, I'm Kate Clinton.
Hello, I'm Armistead Maupin.
I'm Clive Barker.
This is Judy Shepherd.
Hello, this is Ian McKellen.
I'm Jerry Jewell.
I'm Stephen Fry.
I'm Harvey Milk.
Hi, this is Janice Ian.
My name's Robbie Rogers.
This is Essex Hemphill.
I'm Ellen DeGeneres.
I'm Tab Hunter.
I'm Billy Beam.
This is John Cameron Mitchell.
Hello, I'm Bruce Valange.
This is Bishop Gene Robinson.
I'm Reverend Troy Perry.
I'm Robbie Kaplan.
I'm Andrew Sullivan.
This is Augustine Burroughs.
I'm Barney Frank.
I'm Cleve Jones.
My name is Kate Kendall.
I'm Dan Savage.
I'm B.D. Wong.
This is Dorothy Alice.
I'm Patricia Nell Warren.
I'm Amanda Burst.
Hi, I'm Daryl Stevens, and you've discovered
This Way Out.
This Way Out.
This Way Out.
The showpiece of the homosexual movement.
The international radio show for all our sexually diverse communities.
How dare they?
And those who love them.
You ain't gonna get this nowhere else.
Oh, my.
And that's the truth.
Please do stay tuned.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
You're listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine.
And now it's time to set our dials back with the Rainbow Rewind, your look at the moments, milestones, and memories that shape our queer journey.
From hard-won victories to cultural firsts, from the unknown to the iconic legends,
we celebrate the people and events that remind us how far we've come and how far we still shine. I'm Sherry Lunn.
And I'm Brian DeShazer. This week, we honor Matthew Shepard, who was horrifically assaulted October 7th, 1998, and tragically died on October 12th. His death anniversary is profoundly significant in LGBTQ history. His murder sparked national and international outrage and became a rallying point for activism around hate crimes.
The notoriety of his tragic end ultimately contributed toward the passage of the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Prevention Act. His parents, Judy and Dennis, launched the Matthew Shepard Foundation in his memory.
Now let's rewind some key queer moments.
Bob Mellors and Aubrey Walter hosted what became recognized as the UK's first Gay Liberation Front meeting at the London School of Economics on October 13, 1970. This event is often cited as foundational in the UK's organized gay liberation movement.
Between October 17th and 19th in 1980, nearly 200 Black lesbian women met in San Francisco for the first Black lesbian conference.
On October 13, 1990, South Africa saw its first Pride parade in Johannesburg. This was a landmark in queer visibility in a country undergoing massive political change toward ending apartheid and demonstrated how LGBTQ rights were part of a broader struggle and liberation.
That's this week's Rainbow Rewind.
Because our stories aren't just in the past, they're the pride that powers our future.
I'm Brian DeShazer.
And I'm Sherry Lunn. Stay tuned. More This Way Out just ahead.
Around.
It's unfortunate, but not unusual, for queer independent musicians to suddenly disappear without a trace. Frequently, their sounds are never to be heard again. That's why it's a big deal to meet one who's launching an exciting comeback after more than a decade of life's ebbs and flows. This Way Out's David Hunt found this special singer-songwriter riding a rising tide somewhere between New York, New York, and Greenville, South Carolina.
Jenny Arnaud's music rises and falls like the ocean tides, carries you over rivers of mud, leaving you soaked to your soul in the pouring rain. Listening though, and Arnaud will lead you through the storm.
The hardest rain only welcomes the spring, where flowers burst and cicadas sing.
I'm David Hunt. Jenny Arnaud cut her teeth as a singer-songwriter in New York's East Village in the first decade of the millennium. At a time when the city's music scene played host to an indie rock revival, she released three independent albums featuring her signature sound, a shot of southern comfort tinged with an urban edge. Then, just after releasing her third album, Chasing Giants, in 2009, she dropped off the radar.
What am I to do now? Just her. Better luck next time is all you can say. Oh,
Jenny Arnaud is back on the music scene after a 15-year hiatus with a new album full of new songs and new stories of love, loss, and life. I sat down with Arnaud recently to talk about her new album, A Rising Tide, and to find out where she's been and how she's faring. So is it weird doing media for a new album after a few years away?
Yeah, it's very strange. It's really fun, though, because I'm coming from a completely different place. So it feels very kind of new and a little bit exciting, a little refreshing. And I feel like I can be myself more. I've changed in that way. I've grown up a bit. You know, I'm a little more grounded. So it feels kind of nice.
Early in your career, before this break that we're going to talk about, did you feel like you were chasing something, chasing fame or chasing success?
Yeah, a little bit. Actually, a lot. And I also felt like, and this is the interesting thing of before the break to after the break, because before the break, I was chasing and I was losing. And I felt like a failure. Even though it was everything that I loved to do, it became almost a burden. Because I had put the wrong, I feel like I had put the wrong weight on it. It should be always you do it because you love it. And if you happen to be successful, that's fantastic. But most of us don't find monetary success in music. So we have to find what makes us happy. And I just couldn't do, I was too either self-centered or too immature. Or whatever it was. But I felt like I was watching some of my friends get a lot more success. And it just made me feel like a failure.
We alluded to the break you took from music, but we haven't explained it. Life is what happens when you're busy making other plans, right? And life hit you pretty hard.
I don't think I've ever kind of talked about this, but it started off 2005 and 2006. I had a lot of friends pass away. I had a couple pass away from AIDS, and I had a couple pass away from cancer. And it was kind of a, not just a double whammy. It was like a quadruple, you know, whatever whammy. It was just a lot. And around that time, my mother had a fall, and it wasn't even a big deal. Dad took her to the doctor, and they said she had early dementia. And so her curvature down was pretty slow at first, and everything was okay. But around 2008 or 2009, I think she died in 2014, it started to become really kind of problematic. I was very tight with my mother, and it really emptied my tank. I didn't want to really work. I didn't want to play. I didn't want to write. But, you know, slowly but surely you start to kind of put something down like, God, I gotta just put that out, and then kind of walk away. And that's how it started to kind of gear back up. But it took a long time. And I have to say, grief is weird because you don't know how you're going to maneuver through it, you know? And I'll be the first to admit, I didn't maneuver well. I didn't maneuver well through it.
You thought you could hold on one more day. You thought you could hold on one more day. You thought you were strong enough to keep love safe, but the sun's gonna set and the wind's gonna change and the child's gonna cry and your heart will break. Oh.
You were with your now wife, then girlfriend, when your mom's dementia diagnosis was made. Now, I imagine that could have gone any number of ways. How did it go?
My wife is exceptional. And I know everyone says that about their partners. I get it. But she is, she has the abilities to navigate situations that I personally can't navigate. And she brings a lot of clarity to me because I'm a kind of emotional wreck all the time. I'm like, all the time. And so she's always like, you know, that's okay. We'll take this step by step, and we'll take this step by step and this step by step. And ever since we got together, she's been that way.
So there's a song on your new album that I think is a wedding song, but I'm not sure. Heaven in Her Eyes. Does that have anything to do with your relationship?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Heaven in Her Eyes was written for her. We got engaged right after, about 6 months after Mom passed. Mom knew Tamara. She loved Tamara. But that's when we got engaged. And I just thought, I wish that Mom had known that this was going to be my partner for the rest of my life. That's what I wish. Because my mother was everything, was my world when I was a kid. And Tamara has taken that place, not as my mom, but as my partner and someone that I trust implicitly, always. And it's lovely.
With a kiss, they were on their way. Stormy weather, a beautiful day. Every drop of rain is a year with no struggle or pain.
So let's talk about digging your way out of that dark place that you were in, and the part that music writing and performing played in that.
Well, writing definitely played a lot, because when I started to come up for air, I didn't know exactly what air I was coming up to and what I was going to do and how I was going to sound and what it was going to be. And I started writing. Heaven in Her Eyes was one of the first ones that I wrote, and I liked it. And Back to Carolina, I kind of wrote because I was split and I didn't know what I was quite doing. I knew I didn't want to live in Carolina, but I also knew I should be there. You know, my family, my father and my brother took on a lot with my mom, a lot. And though I was going in and out, I didn't feel like I took on as much. And I didn't, to be fair. So Back to Caroline, I wrote because of that. And then I wrote Heaven in Her Eyes. And I kind of liked them both. I was like, I like these songs. I think they sound good. But I just kind of played them for myself and whatever. And I wrote a couple more. And then I sent them off to my two music buddies just to say, hey, I'm writing again. What do you guys think? And my friend Pete, who plays the keyboards on this record, he's like, you got to record. Like, these are great. You got to do it. And then Alan, who's my drummer, he was like, yep, let's get in. And it, every time I wrote another song, it just felt a little lighter. It felt better and better. And like, I was like, wow, I think I can even write. I'm writing a little bit better because I understand myself a little bit more. I've gone through a lot and I understand what I'm trying to say a little bit better.
Going back to Carolina. I've been gone too long. Tried my best to love this place, but it just ain't my home.
Jenny Arnaud's new album, A Rising Tide, will be released November 7th. Find her music on your favorite streaming platform or visit jennyarnaumusic.com. JenneyArnaumusic.com. I'd like to thank Jenny Arnaud for sharing her story and her music for this program. For This Way Out, I'm David Hunt.
Thanks for finding This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. NewsWrap was reported this week by Sarah Montague and Joe Bainline and produced by Brian DeShazer. The Rainbow Rewind was written and produced by Sherry Lennon, Brian DeShazer, and David Hunt produced this week's words and music feature. The Doobie Brothers and Jenny Arnaud performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks John Dyer V of Winston, Oregon, Richard Burke and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley, celebrating 50 years together, and all the listener donors who make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon, associate producer Lucia Chappell, and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Brian DeShazer. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on CFUV, Victoria, British Columbia, KRFP, Moscow, Idaho, WOZO, Knoxville, Tennessee, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay safe, stay healthy, and stay tuned.